If the recent Washington Metro tunnel fire showed anything, it's that emergency coordination down under is practically non-existent. Equally missing was interoperable radio communications, something the federal government has deemed essential for emergency response. Federal efforts to improve radio go back at least 20 years. Alan Tillis is the chairman of the telecommunications department at the law firm Shulman, Rogers, Gandahl, Porty & Ecker, and he joins me now. Alan, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so what do we actually know about radio communications during that Metro incident?
What we know is that 4 days before the incident at the L'Enfant Plaza station, there had been a report that there was a problem with communications at that exact spot. So we know that there was already knowledge that there was a communications problem. What we don't know is why that was not reported to the first responders that would typically use that area in the event of an emergency. In most situations throughout the country, when you have large radio systems like this, whenever you know that there is an outage, the dispatch center will typically report that information to the folks who would be expected in the times of an emergency to be in that area. So far, we don't know why that wasn't done. There's also conflicting reports as to why there wasn't communications. Within 4 days, it wasn't fixed, and that would not be that unusual if it was a very complicated problem, but it looks like here that nothing was done during those 4 days to try to figure out why there was a telecom problem there. And now we have a situation where different folks are trying to explain what the communications problems were and why it happened. And right now, those conflicting stories don't really jive with what you would ordinarily see in these types of situations.
I guess give us a little bit of the technology here. Radios talk to one another directly, so why would there be a blackout zone in a tunnel?
So that's a great question. And so these systems are not cellular radio systems, but they're not that dissimilar. What happens in a Project 25 system, you'll see the news reports talk about a P25 system, and so that's a standard by which these radios work. They have to talk back to a dispatch center. So you need communications from the radio itself back to what's typically called a repeater, which amplifies the signal back to the dispatch center, wherever that happens to be. In the event of a failure of that system, the radios have the ability to go into what we call talk-around mode and what the news reports are calling walkie-talkie mode, where if my radio and your radio are close enough to one another, we can talk to each other, but we cannot talk to the command center. And you can see what happens, the value of this, in emergencies. If the infrastructure were to go down, say, for example, in an earthquake, or this is what was used in Louisiana and New Orleans during Katrina, that walkie-talkie mode enables the two of us to talk if we're in close proximity. However, there are a limited number of channels to do that with, so very quickly you can see that a channel would get crowded and it would be very difficult to communicate response of a number of people to the location, particularly since we can't talk to the dispatch center.
Now, the federal government has been working on this, both for itself and for local and regional agencies, as would have responded in this case. And it could have been a national security incident, for all we know, because there's certainly other places in the world where subways have been bombed and so forth. And so there's this FirstNet effort. And tell us what that is and how that might have affected communications in a situation like we had here in D.C. in the Metro.
Well, first, you have to understand that the radio system that we're talking about that the first responders were using in this case is not a federal radio system. It is a radio system that is a local municipality radio system, and that's typically the way it would be throughout the country. And we have a whole slew of agencies from multiple municipalities that interoperate on this system. So within the DC portion, these underground bidirectional amplifiers, which typically are used underground, would be put in place by the local municipality. So L'Enfant Plaza was in D.C., so most likely this was something that was a responsibility of the D.C. government. Now, on a nationwide basis, what we are trying to do, the federal government wants to put in a nationwide broadband system. And what that would do is to give us the ability, assuming the system's up and running, like this system should have been, to do more than just audio communications between the firefighters, the dispatch center, and the trains. As you probably know, in most areas around the country, these kinds of rail cars often have cameras inside the rail car. So when we have FirstNet built in a location such as this, we would have the ability for any video from that car that is being transmitted back to the communication center to then be pushed out to first responders on the scene so that they could see the video about what was going on in the car, around the car, so that they strategically could know what to do and when to do it, even when there's a smoke like this. Having that video available or being able to download a schematic if there was damage in the tunnel immediately before you send people into the trouble spot would be huge in the event of that type of emergency.
Now, you mentioned earlier there are equipment down in the tunnels that send the radio signals up to the surface where the chief or the battalion chief or the dispatcher is. And so under FirstNet, which is cellular, I guess it's 4G LTE, if you want to get real technical, when it's built, would that require different equipment to be installed in places like the L'Enfant Plaza tunnel?
It would be different in portions of it. Portions of it would not. In the metro system, some portions of that system already, I mentioned BDAs, bidirectional amplifiers, really all you're talking about in that case is telling the system what set of frequencies to move back and forth. In other cases, it would have to be a little more sophisticated. But right now, we already have cellular communications in those tunnels. In fact, what hasn't been discussed is a possibility like we have in the city of Oakland, that it could actually have been cellular communications that caused the two-way radio communications underground there by something that we call blanketing interference. The problem we have in the city of Oakland and in other locations around the country is that when you have an 800 megahertz private or public safety radio system, as this system is, when you are in close proximity to a cellular repeater, the cellular system has the ability to blanket the private radio or public safety radio system, and you will not get any communications on that public safety system in that area. So it's very possible that a BDA or some other cellular portion of the system underground there was actually blanketing the public safety system and preventing it from communicating. That's one of the possibilities here that hasn't been discussed.
We're speaking with Alan Tillis. He's the chairman of the telecommunications department of the law firm Shulman, Rogers, Gandahl, Porty, and Ecker. So that would seem to be the opposite of what you need in an emergency situation. Wouldn't you want the emergency radio communications to blank out people sending selfies of themselves in the train?
That's exactly right, and that's why the concept of FirstNet. I mean, technologically, we already can send that video through the cellular system, but when you have everybody making 911 calls at the same time, the cellular system gets overwhelmed. So the idea of FirstNet is a completely different set of frequencies that have been allocated on a nationwide basis in the 700 megahertz band so that you would have first responder priority, and you wouldn't have to worry about the selfie.
Now, the equipment that you mentioned earlier that would sense what frequencies it has to communicate and repeat and amplify, you're dealing with a metro system that takes 2 years to replace an escalator. How do we know, how can we be assured, how can the federal government be assured that the local agencies like a metro or Washington Fire and Emergency and so forth will maintain the gear that is so important in a situation like this?
That's an excellent question. And on the FirstNet side, that responsibility will be at a federal level, and that's it is yet to be determined as to how that would happen. On the private radio side, as I was saying before, this public safety system is part of a large interoperable system throughout the D.C. region. So almost every decision that's made with regard to the system goes through a lot of vetting with the various municipalities to make sure everybody can communicate on the system. For example, one of the things that was talked about as a potential reason why they had no communications was that the D.C. Fire Department had started to use encrypted communications at the location. Well, I don't think that that is what caused that here, but even if it was, just the mere fact that DC would want to use encryption has to be discussed with all the surrounding municipalities that would also have to interoperate, and they would have to have encrypted capability too. And the difference would be you have, I believe it's Fairfax County, has a very advanced infrastructure and could do very advanced encryption, whereas Montgomery County's infrastructure is much older, and they would not have the ability to do advanced encryption. They could do an older version of encryption. So within the municipalities, when they all talk together, the decision would have to be made, yes, we want encrypted communications, but, oh, because Montgomery County cannot do the most recent versions, we're going to have to do the old version, and the newer versions are generally backwards compatible. So all of those kinds of discussions are always vetted through these user groups in every major urban area across the country.
And does the federal government, does Homeland Security referee in any of this situations?
Generally not. Usually this is handled on the local municipal basis. The only time the feds get involved is that if you are using federal funds to put up the system, there are certain standards by which you have to abide, have certain capabilities in order to get those federal grants. So you would have those bare requirements of the system itself, but how it is governed is really a function of the municipalities working together.
All right, so to sum this all up, what's the major lessons learned here for emergency communication from this particular incident?
I'll use the word communications, and I don't mean necessarily from a wireless side, but from a wired side. Communications has to be improved here amongst these agencies so that the minute there is an outage such as this, if you can't get to it and fix it right away, you are letting every first responder that could be responding to that scene know that we have a signal problem here, and as a result, you will use a certain set of protocols to make sure if there's an event, we can take care of that. That apparently, from what we know so far, was not done here and could have contributed to some of the injuries that occurred.
Alan Tillis is chairman of the telecommunications department of the law firm Shulman, Rogers, Gandahl, Porty & Ecker. As always, thanks so much for joining me.